take your Bible, 1 Samuel 24. I'm going to do something I'm not sure in 7 years I've done, but we're going to read the whole chapter, all 22 verses. I feel like I need to. It's not for lack of information. It's a matter of why should I retell what God said, and it's clear enough. 1 Samuel 24. Tonight, I'm going to talk to you about living peaceably with your actions. Living peaceably with your actions. And it'll make more sense here in a moment. Probably I'm not going the direction you may think, but we'll get there here in a moment. 1 Samuel 24, we're going to read the whole chapter. You follow along. I'm going to read a little bit more quickly, obviously, than we would if we were reading out loud. I've got a lot to say tonight, and reading these many verses, I'll read it just a bit quicker. And it came to pass, when Saul was returned from following the Philistines, that it was told him, saying, "Behold, David is in the wilderness of En-Gedi." Then Saul took 3,000 chosen men out of all Israel and went to seek David and his men upon the rocks of the wild goats. And he came to the sheepcotes by the way, where was a cave, and Saul went in to cover his feet, and David and his men remained in the sides of the cave. The men of David said unto him, "Behold, the day of which the Lord said unto thee, 'Behold, I will deliver thine hand into the enemy, that thou mayest do with him as thou shalt seem good unto thee.'" Then David arose and cut off the skirt of Saul's robe privily. And it came to pass afterward that David's heart smote him because he had cut off Saul's skirt. And he said unto his men, "The Lord forbid that I should do this thing unto my master, the Lord's anointed, to stretch forth mine hand against him, seeing he is the anointed of the Lord." So David stayed his servants with these words, and suffered them not to rise against Saul. But Saul rose up out of the cave and went on his way. David also rose afterward and went out of the cave and cried unto Saul, saying, "My lord the king." And when Saul looked behind him, David stooped with his face to the earth and bowed himself. David said unto Saul, "Wherefore hearest thou thou men's words, saying, 'Behold, David seeketh thy hurt'? Behold, this day thine eyes have seen how that the Lord hath delivered thee today into mine hand in the cave. And some bade me kill thee, but mine eyes spared thee. And I said, 'I will not put forth mine hand against my Lord, for he is the Lord's anointed.' Moreover, my father, see the skirt of thy robe in my hand, for in that I cut off the skirt of thy robe and killed thee not. Now know thou and see that there is neither evil nor transgression in my hand, and I have not sinned against thee, yet thou huntest my soul to take it. The Lord judge between me and thee, and the Lord avenge me of thee, but mine hand shall not be upon thee. As saith the proverb by the ancient, 'Wickedness proceedeth from the wicked, but mine hand shall not be upon thee.' After whom is the king of Israel come out? After whom dost thou pursue? After a dead dog? After a flea? The Lord therefore be judge, and judge between me and thee, and see, and plead my cause, and deliver me out of thine hand." It came to pass, when David had made an end of speaking these words unto Saul, that Saul said, "Is this the voice of my son David?" And Saul lifted up his voice and wept. And he said to David, "Thou art more righteous than I, for thou hast rewarded me good, whereas I have rewarded thee evil. Thou hast showed this day how that thou hast dealt well with me, for as much as when the Lord hath delivered me into thine hand, thou killest me not. For if a man find his enemy, will he let him go well away? Wherefore the Lord reward thee good that thou hast done unto me this day. And now, behold, I know well thou shalt surely be king, and that the kingdom of Israel shall be established in thine hand. Swear now therefore unto me by the Lord, that thou wilt not cut off my seed after me, and that thou wilt not destroy my name out of my father's house." And David sware unto Saul, and Saul went home. But David and his men gat them up unto the hold. Now, King Saul has been chasing David and hunting him as though David were an animal. David had been anointed king, but David did not yet take the throne. Saul has already blown his opportunity to be king in God's eyes, if you remember, and he did not obey God, and God said, "Oh, look, I'm going to take the throne away from your family. He rose up David. Samuel anointed David as king, 1 Samuel chapter 16. 1 Samuel 17, David kills Goliath. Now, to me, the amazing part of that story is, why did the king let a 17-year-old boy go fight a battle? I'll tell you why. Saul wanted David dead. Saul was trying to have David killed with Goliath, so the blood wasn't on his hands. That didn't work, and David has had to flee from Saul several times since chapter 18. This is another one of those times. He is in a place called En-Gedi, and David and his men are in a cave. They're resting, and all of a sudden, Saul and his men enter the cave. It's interesting to me. They entered the cave, and they slept all night in the same cave as David and David's men. And David's men were saying, hey, here's your chance. The Lord delivered him. God told you that he would. Now what are you going to do? You ought to go down there and kill him. If you kill him, this is all over. And David said, I will not stretch forth mine hand against the Lord's anointed. But he did go down and cut the end of his robe off. And he stayed in the cave. And as he came, and the next morning, Saul leaves. David's men get up. They follow behind. They wait till Saul and his men get a little distance away. David goes to the mouth of the cave and hollers, hey, Saul! Can you imagine what that felt like? David begins to tell Saul, he says, look, I could have killed you, but I didn't. I had people telling me to kill you, but I did not. And you say, why? Because David had predetermined he wouldn't put his hand against the Lord's anointed. Now, David tells Saul that he could have killed him, but because of his principles, he would not. Now, David, unlike most Christians, predetermined his actions or his behavior towards his enemy, towards people. David knew what David would do before David was put into the situation that David was put into. In other words, David chose his behavior. He did not react to the opportunities before him. Most people live reactionary lives. Most people, something happens and they react to it. God says, I don't want you to live your life that way. Too many people in our behavior, boy, we react when something happens. Let me show you what I mean. That was a reaction. I throw my pen, and by reaction, he catches it. Say, why is that? Because we're prone to, if something's tossed at us, to either protect or catch. It's just an instinct. Can I tell you something? God doesn't want you to live your life that way, though. He doesn't want your behavior to be that way. It needs to be planned. Let me show you what I mean. I knew what I was going to do. And I'll get into this in a moment, but I want you to listen to something. Most people live their life like a pinball bouncing around from one object to the next. From one event to the... How many of you all know what pinball is? Okay, whew, I'm not that old. Okay, whew. It must still be popular. But anyway, and it wasn't... You didn't play it on a phone either. It was actually played on a real thing. Now, that might be a little old-fashioned, but a pinball, it hits one of those little bumper things that are bouncing all over the place. It is reacting to that which it runs into. Most people, that's how they live their life. The sun didn't shine as bright today, so I'm feeling bad. The sun was bright, but it was cold, so I want to move to Florida. The sun was too hot, so I want to move to Alaska. I mean, people, they go from, you know, one phone call they're happy, the next phone call they're sad, the next one they're mad. And it is nothing but a reactionary life. God doesn't want you to live reactionary. He wants you to plan your behavior. David planned his behavior to Saul. Look at verse 17. And he said to David, "Thou art more righteous than I, for thou hast rewarded me good, whereas I have rewarded thee evil." He said, look, you chose to do good to me. I chose to do bad to you. Now, I want to help you tonight. I've got about four or five things that it'll change your life if you let it. And I want to show you what God means about living peaceably with your actions and not living in reaction. Number one, what is action and reaction? Action is planned principle. Action is planned principle. Action is like the offense on a sports team. Y'all know what that means? You've got the ball. You're setting, let's say it's football, college football season is upon us. The offense is the team that has the quarterback and the ball, and they set the plan. Did you know that offense always has an advantage over defense? Because offense knows what the play is. Defense has to respond to what they see as it takes place. So an aggressive offense will almost always beat a defense. General George Patton, in 2.5 years of battle during World War II, he conquered more land. They had more land mass taken. He started in North Africa, marched across North Africa, up across to Sicily, over to Italy, all the way up Italy, over the Alps, then came through the east or west side of France, marched all the way across France into Germany, including the Bulge, and pushed Germany back into Berlin, and he wanted to keep going, fighting as he went. Now, wait a minute, had 258,000 casualties, that's wounded and killed. That's not how many people died, that's how many were wounded in out of his armies. And 1.75 million casualties to the Germans. He did more than any army in the history of the world. Do you know what his claim to fame was? Quick action. They had just put a new general in under him, and General Hebert, and he had dinner the night that he got moved into the 7th Army, and he was sitting down with some of the big shots, and he said, "I probably in the next 12 hours, General Patton will call me and tell me that I need to start marching." He no sooner got through the hors d'oeuvres, the phone rang. They brought the phone to him. He said, "Yes, sir, General Patton. Yes, sir. Yes, sir." He said, "Well, I was off. It wasn't 12 hours. It was 12 minutes. He said, "We march at 0800 tomorrow morning." And that's how he was. He knew the best thing to do is to keep marching forward faster. You see, when you do that, your enemy doesn't have time to plan. You dig in, they can plan. You keep marching, you got them on their heels. They have to react to you. And that is exactly the way we're supposed to live our lives. We're supposed to stay marching. We're supposed to have it planned, be on offense at all times. Reaction is like defense. You're reacting to it. You see the action. You have to think through what the action is, decide how you're going to respond to that action, and then respond. The Christian should always stay on offense and behavior, because to live by reaction means someone else is determining your behavior. Let me show you what I mean. I know what my behavior will be. But he had to react to my behavior. In other words, my behavior controlled his behavior. Except that's your pen. I want mine. Good try. Throw me the false one. I'll get back at you. Wait a minute. In other words, a planned action beats an unplanned reaction. If I plan, see, David planned if he ever got to the place where he could kill Saul, he would not do it. He said, I will not stretch forth mine hand against the Lord's anointed. If I'm to take the throne, God's taking him down, not me. He had already determined he would not react no matter how bad it got. Did you ever notice Saul threw a javelin at David 3 different times? David got out of the way. You say, why? He was smart. But he didn't go after King Saul. Now, listen to these next couple statements here. It's all related. This means that no one else can ruin your mood, your attitude, or your behavior. You ruin your own. Your actions ruin your own behavior. Only you can control your behavior. If you allow someone else to cause you to react, you self-destruct because you allowed them to destroy you. Did you know it takes two to argue? Not just one. Reaction takes a person away from the from controlling their own destiny. If I allow him to cause me to react, it's my fault, not his. And I have allowed him then to control my destiny. Everybody understand that? You see, I'm supposed to decide no matter what he says, no matter how he says it, no matter what he does, no matter how he does it, I'm not going to let him control my actions. He didn't know it. I didn't know it was going to happen this way. I had asked him to do something for me today. Doesn't matter what. He didn't do it quite the way I asked him to do it. Then comes back and said, I did this. I said, that's not what I asked you to do. Well, that's the way I took it. Now, my flesh wanted to react. What did I do? I got up and I acted. We went and we fixed it. I didn't react. He wanted a little proof. I dug it out of the trash can and showed him and said, that's not how I saw it. I said, that's okay. Nobody died. It's not the end of the world. But we fixed it. I didn't react. I didn't respond. I acted. Now, I can't tell you, nor will I tell you, what all went on in between my ears for a little while. Say why? None of your business. I'm not going to let it control me. Just because it went on in there didn't mean it had to come out here. Everybody doing all right? And you don't know if it was good or bad. But may I say this? I wasn't going to react. I'm not going to let that cause me to have a bad day. By the way, there was no tension. There was no problem. Just a little thing. I know people who have lost their temper over less. I promise you, I probably have in years gone by. You say, why? Because I've learned not to let that control me. I had to decide to act by action, not by reaction. Too many of us react to the situation. And you live in panic mode. Put a bag over your head and quit hyperventilating. Tie it tighter if you keep going. Eventually you quit hyperventilating. and then have somebody else rip the bag off, all right? In other words, I am not about to let somebody else control my behavior. I'm not going to let somebody else being upset control my behavior. I'm not going to let somebody that's depressed control my behavior. I'm not going to allow somebody that's I can't use that word. Up and down, roller coaster-ish. Did you ever meet somebody like that? I'm not going to let them control my behavior. I'm not sure if they're up, down, in the middle, or if they're about to crash. I don't allow that to control my behavior. In other words, don't react. Plan your actions. Number two, how do you do that? Don't spend casual time with people who cause you to react. Can I tell you something? There are people that push your buttons. Y'all know what I'm talking about? You got to be careful spending time with people that push your buttons. You say, well, they just rub me the wrong way. Then what are you doing so close to them so they can rub you? When people rub me the wrong way on a continual basis, do you know what I do? I put distance between us so they can't rub me the wrong way. It doesn't mean I'm rude. It doesn't mean that I hate you and I'll never talk to you again. It doesn't mean that I am not cordial and kind. But it doesn't mean I'm not going to come over to your house and sit down for 3 hours and let you rub me the wrong way. Y'all know what I'm talking about? Okay. The wrong or offensive person generally seeks out the stronger one. It is the weaker who seeks the negative who seeks out the positive, not the positive seeking out the negative. Did you ever notice it was Saul chasing David, not David chasing Saul? Did you ever notice it's the one who's trying to push your button that's chasing you? You're not chasing them? Unless it's to beat them to death? No. Saul sought David. David did not seek Saul. And by the way, they keep seeking you so they can push that button and break you down. They like to see you get conquered. It's that simple. I have preachers who I would say are my friend, but I don't spend casual time with them because they know how to push my button. And because they know how to push my button, I won't spend casual time with them. Now, you may have to work with people like this. You may have people who live in your home like this. But may I say this? If you work with people like that, it doesn't mean you got to sit with them at lunch. You don't have to sit there and with them every day at break time. You know, there are just some people that can't figure out, okay, this person makes me mad every day, but you sit with them every day. Do you see the problem to the equation? 1 + 1 is always going to be 2. 1 + 0 = 1. Let them be by themselves. Too many of us, we just go back into it and let them barf all over us. Let them push our button. Let us get mad. And then we wonder why, well, I got to change jobs. I hate those people down there. Well, if you didn't sit with the people that hate you, maybe you wouldn't hate your job. Boy, that's a good statement. Number three, I better hurry up. It's getting quiet in here. I love you. All right, number three. Don't read materials by or about, and don't listen to things said by or about those who cause you to react. There are certain people, if I read their material, I get ticked off. It would take me about that long to read something from Nancy Pelosi, and I'd be upset. So I don't read anything she puts out. I don't listen to her speak. I can't stand it. Good grief. I mean, all she needs is one of those bikes, and she'd look like the Wicked Witch of the West on The Wizard of Oz, you know? I'll get you! No. Man. You know, every time I see that woman's face in the news, I thank God I don't have to wake up to that every day. You know, I don't read things about things that will cause me to react negatively. I used to consume a lot of news. I still consume news, but I don't do it by watching news. I do it by reading news because I can control how much of it I listen to and read. I don't have to sit through the garbage can and wait for them to get to the bottom to show me where the meat was. I can get right to it. There are certain preachers I won't listen to, nor do I read their material because they make me upset. I probably shouldn't mention a name. I'll do it. And I hate even calling him a preacher. His name's Phil Kidd. Phil Kidd is a wild, screaming idiot. Number one, he's an MMA fighter. Number two, mixed martial arts. So here's a guy who gets up and preaches, and then he gets in a cage and starts fighting with people, and he enjoys it. The guy's got a few screws loose. Now, he's an exciting ride for about 10 minutes, but you can't build a Christian life off of what he preaches, just so you know. I would advise you not listening to him. Okay? You say, why? Number one, at times he's a heretic. There's another guy out there. Total other opposite end of the spectrum. But somebody that you need to be told about. A guy named Steve Anderson. Steve Anderson is the biggest heretic this side of hell. Just so you know. Steve Anderson is a full-blown false prophet of God and a heretic. Don't listen to him. He sends me stuff. I don't know how in the world this guy gets everybody's mailing address, but I've gotten videos and CDs and books. You say, what do you do with it? When it comes from, I think he's from Nevada. I think he's from Las Vegas area or somewhere out in that, either Arizona or Nevada. I forget what state, but he doesn't even put his name on things. He's so controversial, he can't put his name on things, or people do what I do with it, and as soon as they see it, they go right in the round file. Trash can. I don't open it. I just throw it away. I know who it's from. I throw it away. Say, well, what if it was good material? The only good material was the box that it was wrapped in. Trust me. You say, aren't you interested to find out what he has to say? No more interested than I am listening to the devil. The guy's a heretic. The wise person will not allow people's materials or words to cause them to react. If I listened to that guy, I would get up and preach a whole series of sermons against the guy. And you don't even know who he is, most of you. So what good would it do? But it sure would make me feel better. But it's not going to help you at all. Everybody understand where I'm coming from? Some of you read things too often and make you upset or listen to things. If for some reason I have quote-unquote Christian radio on in my truck or car, and some guy gets up and says something, first thing I do is go and change. Because I'm not about to listen to some guy exegete or execute the scriptures and slaughter it. They make me mad. So what do? Change the stupid station or put music on or turn it off and listen to silence and talk to God. Number four, I got to hurry here. You think I'm kidding. I got 2.5 pages of notes left, and I have 12 minutes. Number four, there are times you have to ignore what makes you react. There are times you have to ignore what makes you react. Then you have to discipline your mind not to open your mouth. Don't frustrate yourself then by thinking about that so that you don't open your mouth. I don't preach around a lot. I may be on vacation at times and been in churches or preach around the country. And I've been preaching in services, sitting on the platform, and somebody will get up and sing a song that I absolutely despise. I absolutely despise the style. I absolutely despise the song. Say, what do you do? I look down at my notes and I start thinking about my sermon and I don't listen to it. I ignore it. When I was in Bible college, I taught myself how to sit in a ton of noise and block everything out and be able to focus. We had a place called Liberty Square. Liberty Square was a room about four times the size of this auditorium, and it was kind of the meeting hall for tables and chairs, and you had a little, you could buy food in there and coffee and that kind of stuff, and everybody just kind of hung out there. It wasn't a dating parlor, but pretty close. And there was always 100, 150 people in there or more, and it's loud. And I mean real loud all the time. Brick walls, brick ceiling, you know, concrete ceiling, brick wall. I mean, just deafening loud. Say, what'd you do? I'd take my books in there, sit down at a table, and I would read and study and do my work just to be able to block out all the noise. I can go to an airport, sit down in the waiting area and not hear anything going on. A bomb could go off and I'm not paying attention to it. Say, why is that? Because I've learned how to block those things out. And that's what you have to do when you have to be around things that cause you to react. If it's not in your area of rule when it happened, it's now not in your area of rule either. So why do you want to dwell on it? If you didn't make the decision to make that happen, then why do you want to sit there and dwell on it and tell everybody for the next 3 hours how bad it was? My wife and family and I, we've been in some churches on vacation that were of lesser quality, let's just say. We don't have roast preacher and roast Sunday school teachers after church on vacation. There's only one time. Let me rephrase that. There was twice. Church in town where my mom and dad were living at one, both times. We had gone to a church and the preacher started preaching against me. Guy found out I was working for Brother Hiles. Boy, he got up. And finally, about halfway through his message, I literally stood up and said, "It's okay, you can mention me by name." And I grabbed my wife's hand and my kids and we walked out. Lo and behold, my dad and my mom come walking behind us. He said, "He gonna talk like that about you in front of you?" He said, "I ain't staying either." There's one other time we almost walked out, but the guy just about dedicated his whole sermon to me. I sat there. You probably don't even remember it. Say why? Because we didn't talk about it. Now, I did tell my wife. My dad said, "I didn't know it was going to be like that." And they didn't go back either. But we didn't sit there and talk about it. We didn't hash it over and over and over and over again. Wasn't in our area rule. Why sit there and have a bad day over it? At least he didn't pick on somebody else. That's good enough for me. You see, too many times we dwell on it, and then we're going to complain about it, then we're going to get mad about it, and everybody that was either a part of it that had nothing to do with it, now you're mad at everybody for no reason at all, because it's not even your area rule. So don't react negatively while it happens, and don't relive it negatively after it happened. Because when you relive it, you're reacting. Number five. This is the hard one. You ready? Plan your reactions to every situation you can in advance. Plan your reactions in advance as much as you can. In other words, foresee what may come, plan how you'll respond, In other words, it's an action, not a reaction. David planned his action. He knew he would not kill Saul. In other words, he saw it coming, did not know when it would come, but when it did come, he had his actions planned and he lived that action. He didn't step outside of it. You may be forced to respond, but you can plan in advance how you're going to do so. In other words, this changes a reaction to a principle-based action. So many things I want to say. Let me show you what I mean. Plan your reaction to criticism. How will you respond when somebody criticizes? Some of you just, I don't know. You haven't told me what they're going to criticize me about. No, how are you going to react? Plan it. You see, no one likes to be criticized. When you are criticized, listen to this statement. When you're criticized, the reaction of the flesh, he's dead. The reaction of the flesh is to react and lash back. In other words, our flesh says, we're not supposed to hear that. That's against what my flesh wants, so I'm coming after you. But that's not how we're supposed to react to criticism. My Bible says, answer not a fool according to his folly, lest he be wise in his own conceit. I was in a situation, I had a board of people that were evil. I won't go into a long dissertation about it, but it came down to they wanted to fire me or tell me I had to resign. Well, I had about a couple days knowing things were brewing. And that day I kind of knew things were brewing a little bit differently. And I kind of had an inkling something bad was about to happen. They said, you're either going to get fired or you're going to resign. And I said, I have never been fired before in my life and I wouldn't give you the satisfaction of it. I'll resign. What they didn't know is I understood the bylaws of where they were at, and if they fired me, they were in trouble. I even spared my enemy. And I decided I would not criticize. Now, wait a minute. I won't tell you what my flesh wanted to do. My flesh wanted something totally different. I had the influence underneath me. I had the power to override it, but I chose not to use it. Say why? Because I'd already planned my action. So plan your reaction, plan your action to criticism. Plan your response and don't let your flesh get in the way. It's going to want to. At that time, your tongue is about that big. Trust me. And it's moving about 4,000 miles per second. But you got to hold it. Plan your reaction to what angers you. Have you ever made a list of what makes you mad? Most of you do not know what makes you mad until you fly off the handle. Say, everything makes me mad. Mm-hmm. Because you're reacting. I know what makes me angry. And I've planned how I'm going to deal with it when it comes. Plain and simple. You say, preacher, are you perfect at it? No nail prints. Can't tell you. I'm always like I should be. I try not to yell at the other drivers on the road. Lord tested me tonight. I was coming to church. Came to the four-way stop at Van Cleesville Road. Lady came there first. She stops. I stop. I'm turning left. She's going straight. She stopped 4 or 5 seconds before I did. And she's sitting there. I flash my lights. Another guy pulls up. He stops. She's sitting there. I'm flashing my lights. Then she goes about 2 miles an hour through the whole intersection. And I was going, I did my part. I was nice, Lord. Thank you, Jesus. And I took my turn. Then I started laughing. It's 40 degrees outside. Everybody's got their windows up. Even if she heard what I was thinking, she couldn't hear what I was saying anyway. What good does it do to yell at somebody when they can't even hear you? Well, that makes me feel better. Yeah, but that's about it. So plan what angers you. We generally know what makes us angry. Then how about we plan how we're not going to get angry when those things happen? Don't let your flesh respond. Let your principle respond. David had every right to kill Saul. Do you know from the time David was 16 years old, 17 years old, he had a right to the throne of Israel? He didn't take it for almost 15 years. He was 30 years old or 40 years old. He was for another 20 plus years. You see, I'm going to make a statement here. David had every right to kill Saul out of self-defense, but he did not. You see, he wasn't going to lift his hand against God's anointed king. Say, why? Because he's going to be the next one. Say, well, somebody comes after me, in self-defense. Now, you better, before you get too aggressive there, you better think through this. It's pretty serious to take another person's life. Pretty serious. It's going to have to be a pretty intense situation before that happens. So, plan your reaction to what angers you. Lastly here, plan for those things for which you would fight. What would you fight for? I know what I'll fight for. Nobody should fly off the handle and fight impulsively. Action does not fight due to temporary provocation. Action only fights to predetermined causes. Do you have a list of which you would fight for? Somebody trying to hurt my family? I'm going to fight. Somebody trying to hurt one of you all here at church? I'm going to fight. Somebody wants to talk down America? I'm going to get in their face. I don't care if it's Colin Kaepernick or what a jerk. Had Unthanksgiving Day protesting America. Can I tell you something? There ought to be some. I told you a story recently. I was last professional ball game I think I went to. I threatened a couple guys I was going to jerk them out of their seat if they didn't stand for the national anthem. See, why is that? Because I'll fight for America. I'll fight for my country. I got no respect for a president or anybody else that won't, Mr. Obama. David did not fight for self-defense. David did not fight for position rightly his. David did not fight for personal integrity. He chose to avoid and run away from that. He chose to keep from confrontation. You won't believe this. My wife knows it's true. My children know it's true. I hate confrontation. I hate it with a passion. But you back me in a corner, we're going to have it. I'll avoid it at all costs, but when it comes time to confront, buddy, it's going to explode. It's all saved up, ready to go. I work hard at not having confrontation. I don't want to be the reason for someone else to do more evil. Because if I have to confront them, they're going to attack and become an enemy and become evil. So I don't want to be the cause for them doing more evil. I got to finish. I'm done. We've been led to believe that by lost people, that being a critic is a good thing. Find one place in that book where it says you ought to be a constructive critic. It's not there. We criticize everything in our society today. We've got to find all the wrong. Isn't it amazing? The Bible says that the Lord looks on the just and the unjust. He sees our good as much as he sees our bad. Matter of fact, if you're saved, he doesn't see your bad. It's under the blood. Is all he sees is your good. And yet we want to pick on all and criticize. Well, I think you ought to do it this way. Well, if it's yours to do, then you do it. If it's not, shut your mouth. You don't have to criticize what everybody else does. You see, I can show you dozens and dozens and dozens of scriptures that tells you not to be a critic. We critique to get a reaction. We want people to react and respond and act our way. Isn't it amazing? All these pro sports analysts and sports analysts that have never played football in their life or baseball in their life know what the guy should do. It amazes me how many people want to criticize the way a person plays a sport who has never played that sport to the level that person is playing. That's like a little leaguer telling Mickey Mantle what he's doing wrong. Well, bless God, I know if I was... Well, show us how to do it. You're so tough, get out there. Oh, yeah, I can't do that. Yeah, exactly. Shut your mouth. How about we learn to live peaceably with our actions by not reacting? Say, preacher, how do you live peaceably with your actions? Don't react, plan them. Plan your action. If you have a planned action, you won't have a reaction. And usually, reaction means you're in trouble. Let's plan our actions as David did. I will not raise mine hand against the Lord's anointed. That was a planned action, not a reaction. He did not kill Saul. By the way, the Bible says that from that time forth, Saul never tried to kill David again. He ended it by a planned reaction. They didn't keep fighting because of a reaction. Every head bowed, every eye closed, I'm done. Let's quit living our lives and behaviorally like a pinball machine. Quit bouncing around and banging around into everything and reacting to everything.